you know, could be a multi-generational destination indeed, but, and also not to be treated equally or the same. So it's back to diversity and inclusion, but to have appropriate planning done for them based on who they are. And that is so important in so many ways. So for example, kind of thinking back to communication, I think a client, and your question, a client should demand a diverse practice to work with where it is sensitive to when that client is has a seat at the table and we hear their voice. Are we hearing their voice? Are we adjusting our meeting environment perhaps to their needs, to their comfort? I think what's so neat about having a financial planning practice that is truly an integrated practice where that qualitative component comes first, it provides a setting where, I mean, I think it's impossible for any one person to be knowledgeable about preferences of every culture, of all people from all walks of life, right? So if we have an inclusive culture where the clients, everyone feels free to sit at our table, and if we focus on them and we ask the right questions, we can figure out, how's our cadence? Is this environment appropriate? I've asked them to come to a restaurant, but that's not appropriate. Or I asked to come to their home. Oh, they wanted to come to my office. I mean, all the things that could go wrong, we increase and heighten our sensitivity and awareness to figuring out, how do we make every meeting go right? And it's kind of like you must be an observer of yourself and so forth to be able to make sure that what you're trying to accomplish is being accomplished. And I kind of have a couple of items that we can use as a checklist that we can probably talk about later. But yes, I think the clients must demand a diverse practice where it the experience, because, you know, if you think about a when you're a child and if you go walk back on the campus of a school that you went to, right? Elementary school or middle school or high school. Well, I know for myself, when I go do that, which I've done a few times, the only things I remember is not what I was taught. I didn't really remember the content of the curriculum. I really remember how I felt about the whole thing. I remember experiences and where my heart was and so forth. Well, I think that's what clients do. So we have to remember that the most important thing, because we want to attract clients. We want to convert people to be clients. We want to keep them as clients. We want to retain them. We want to grow them and develop them, right? I mean, if we don't have clients, we're not in business. So clients are really, really important to us. So we just must be sure that that client experience is tailored for the client. Like, for instance, I remember walking into someone's office and they had all these heads mounted on the wall from their big game hunting. Okay, now I'm a vegan. I was so horrified at that. I just will never forget it as long as I live, sitting there waiting for this professional to come out and greet me. And I was just dying. I don't even know what they said. I couldn't get the heads out of my mind. So it's like things like that. I mean, that's a little graphic, but it was true. And they had the bearskin rug on the floor. I was just not comfortable. So I had a very bad emotional experience. They could have been the best professional on the planet with the greatest skills, but I can't get past the heads on the wall. So that's kind of an example. So we really have to be sensitive of our inclusion that people, so maybe it's a more neutral environment even, so that we're able to be appealing to all people so that we can hear their voice. So again, a long answer. I'm so sorry. I get excited about the heads on.
But I think that the experience part that you mentioned about how you felt, that does make a huge difference. So when you talked about when you were in elementary school, and you're right, I don't remember any content, obviously, but all I remember was the sound and the summer hot heat. So you're right. So there, that experience said is exactly what the clients are also going through their mind as well. But I'm going to ask you a little bit more difficult question. Today, in today's environment, if I look around of most of the younger advisors, if you will, most of the younger advisor I know of all have their practice virtually. So when someone is practicing virtually, how should they deliver that experience that we don't necessarily, because we can't smell it, we can see each other, but we don't necessarily able to do much of other than that. What advice do you have in terms of operating virtually?
Well, and you know, I think virtually just helps us resolve so many of these problems, right? And I think that virtual communication with clients, there will probably be many things that stay with us from our COVID experience. And this will be a best practice. And how to your point, to have an effective Zoom call with someone is really important because, again, it may not be the math they remember. It will be that they remembered the sound or the background noise or the camera was crooked or the person was sitting in the dark or whatever it is. So indeed, I think that to be as polished as possible with virtual communication is really important just from the technology, right? So we want to be technologically very competent. But then we need to figure out what's the best way to orchestrate those meetings. From setting up an agenda for ourselves, whether it's a actually shared agenda with the client, which indeed is probably the best thing to do, and to have it be one that, depending on what kind of a meeting is it, right? Is it an introductory meeting? Is it an ongoing meeting? Is it providing a quarterly review of performance? You know, set it up so that the client understands the time frame, that there's no surprises. I think that's one of the biggest things to do is to have clarity of the communication beginning and stop time, being respectful of what they agreed to is what we provide. So to your point, there's a whole skill set to doing that well and making it comfortable for the client.
Yeah, I remember, and thank you for reminding me about the idea of share agenda. It is so critical. It's not just my meeting. If you want the clients to be at the table with you, they need to also voice what they like to talk about, what is important for them. One time I had a meeting, this was probably last year, with a married couple. And in that case, the wife was the, what I call the dominant player for the couple. Usually the dominant player makes some sort of financial decisions or decisions. And at the time I was looking at both of them trying to squeeze into one camera, if you will. So I can tell that they were using one computer and I can barely see him and I can barely hear him. So I actually have to interrupt the meeting and say, would you mind to switch the camera a little bit over to him? So I actually can see his facial expression. What is he actually talking about? And so you're right. Sometimes it might be very dumb for me to ask that kind of questions, but they were actually giggling and laughing. And, you know, they were telling me that they don't know how to use a computer for the Zoom meeting. So I think that we, as an advisor, need to be not only proficient on the technology part, but also get the clients involved in the virtual environment. So thank you very much for that.
Yeah.
So when it comes to viable actions, what do you think some of the ways that practice could do now to greatly improve the diversity, the inclusion, and the belongingness from a client's perspective?
Well, I kind of have two answers. One is I was thinking, and maybe I'll just pop this topic out there, because what I'd like to do is go through kind of a little checklist of real obvious things to me that people should look at. But I want to address the, if you're a solo practitioner, which so many of our advisors are, maybe virtually will really allow for that building of a team, you know? So like, for instance, say an advisor does not prepare taxes. Well, it might be great with a Zoom to real easily introduce for 5 or 6 minutes a tax professional who you want to introduce into the equation as part of your team, or an attorney if you're not an attorney, or whatever is a complementary profession that's part of your referral network. With the Zoom, we can so quickly provide the client access to really comprehensive services that maybe if we weren't stuck at home, it might be harder. You know, sometimes clients, they don't follow through, right? Where they say, sure, I'll call them. Okay, and so then it never happens. So instead you have a meeting scheduled where these folks are planned for. So I just wanted to mention that, because with diversity and inclusion, really the team concept, no matter if you're a solo practitioner or not, you can introduce people into your team so that, I mean, really, we are only ourselves, right? I am never going to be male, and I am never going to be 40 years old again, and so forth and so on. But I can introduce people into my team if I need them, who would be millennials or who could be male or so forth. And really with the technology of virtual communication, it's just a gift for us at this time. So I wanted to follow up on what you had just said. I was thinking about the sole practitioner, because, you know, when you're thinking about diversity and inclusion, and back to your question right now, what can you do about it? Well, if you're a manager, you can go hire to your gaps. You can do a gap assessment and say, look, my practice is 90% male and everyone's over 50. All right. So where's the gap, right? Non-male, under 50. So that manager can go look for those candidates, right? But if you're not a manager and you're running a great practice, but you are who you are and you'd like to look a little more diverse, build a team around you. And plus, you know, that's a great way to market. We should do another webinar on marketing and building target and natural markets. Okay, so, but truly building that referral base, the COIs, and having it be part of your team. So, so kind of back to what I was thinking about, you know, what are some ways to enhance your practice? I want to frame these questions that you can ask yourself under the umbrella of what do you look like, right? What do you look like really? So it's back to when a client drives up to your office, what's the experience from the beginning, right? From when they get out of the car in the parking lot, they go up to the front door, they open the front door, they see the lobby, they smell the fresh baked cookies. And I only say that because I used to do that. And they are offered a cup of hot coffee or tea. How's that experience? Oh, or are they offered those things? So how's it all feel? Like, is your messaging from the beginning of their journey to come see you, is it what you intend? And sometimes we have to call in some help, right? Because sometimes we can't see the end of our nose because it's right there all the time. So it's really great to have other people come in and see and give you input. So I can't recommend that highly enough. It is a great experience. So make sure your messaging is deliberate. Now, since we're not physically in offices all the time, how about your website? What message does that send? When someone looks at your website, do they feel included? Do they feel like, hey, I could go to this person? Or does it speak to them? So virtual messaging, what does the signature line on your email look like? I mean, everything. Is the message intentional? Or rather, the message you're sending, is it what you're intentionally sending? So that's one. And then how well does your value proposition resonate for different targeted audiences? And oh wait, are you sharing your value proposition? Do you have a compelling mission and vision to communicate? The answer should be yes. And then my answer is please communicate it so that, again, you're creating this community. And then language, back to communication. Is your language appropriate for all audiences? Are there gendered references? Do you use slang? Are you formal or informal? And so forth and so on. It might take another outside set of ears to hear what he is saying. And not just, I mean, you know what you're saying, but how's it being received? So back to the team, right? And then what about if you do eat food with your client or you offer them food? Are you sensitive to their dietary restrictions given their cultural background and so forth? So, and this just applies, oh my goodness, so much, you know, because you want people to feel included, not excluded. So don't invite me over and only have meat. Okay, I'm not gonna feel welcome. So the kind of a simple idea. And then what's your social media presence? Back to that messaging. Will your clients or your prospective clients look at your social media and feel like they could jump in your community with you? And then how do you conduct your meetings and where? That's really important. You know, when you look at research, 11 to 25% of women feel rushed by their financial advisor. That is really important to note. If one out of every four women that you meet as a client, they feel rushed. Now, it's not just women. It's a lot of different cultures, right? Everyone's got their cadence. Do you speak too slow for some cultures? Do you speak too fast? So just being sensitive and being a good student of who are you meeting with. And then probably communication, communication methods and frequencies, and this will just be my last one, to have clear expectations with your clients is really important. And really it's more, how often do they need and feel they'd like you to communicate with them? And then to be sure that you do it, whether it's weekly, monthly, quarterly, annually, and so forth.
Wow, I was jotting down all the checklist that you're providing, and I'm saying, okay, I really failed most of them. Number one, messaging, right? Messaging, consistent messaging across, not necessarily just the website, the email signatures, the same thing that you say, so that, and social media as well. The second thing that you have is when you are speaking to the client, whether or not you are using the appropriate language as well. I think the language, the experience that you have mentioned in there. And I just kind of thought, wow, I really didn't really thought about that. And then when appropriate, you mentioned that if you are taking the clients out for dinner or lunch, dietary culture. You know, one time I had someone took me out to lunch, and I really appreciate that they have considered me. So they went to a Chinese restaurant, but they actually picked a restaurant that no Chinese will go to. And so I can relate to what you're saying, that they did such a good effort to accommodate me, but they did not know that that's a restaurant most Chinese will not go to. So that little tiny detail does make a difference. And then you mentioned about how you conduct a meeting, right? How the meeting is actually conducted. All of these little details, I felt like I probably failed probably at least half of them. But one thing that I do picked out, and that was really important, I think, is regardless about whether or not you're a solo practitioner or a bigger team, and that's the ability to build your team, the center of influences. I recall that it took me a while to build that team, but it's absolutely worth it. It's not just a one-way street of introducing clients to them. Oftentimes, it could be another way that those center of influence will be introducing you to clients. The example you mentioned about clients not necessarily follow up on what they're supposed to do, and you're right. In my practice, I actually, in the implementation schedule, I literally have coordinating the meeting with the attorney at the same time, so I can make sure that they actually get it done. And when they are reviewing the document from the end result from the attorney's documents, I actually requested to be in the room to make sure that it is exactly what it's planned, it's supposed to meet with clients' goals and objectives. So thank you for sharing that. All of those are huge. It's not just a two checklist. I think that's more than 10 items on my list to do. So thank you for sharing that. Now, if you were to give one advice for the next generation of financial planning professionals, what would that be?
Oh, gosh, only one thing. I would say have an integrated financial planning practice where you really build your skills on the interior aspects of financial planning and the exterior aspects of financial planning and bring them together, keeping the client, all client-centric. At all times.
Right. And then that's part of what planning does, right? If you don't have that integrated process or planning, your clients is not going to get the holistic pictures, if you will, at the end of the day, and it may slow down how they achieve their goals and objectives. So thank you so much for that. This has been a pleasure. I took so much notes that I'm actually using 2 or 3 pages of my notes of what you're saying. This is very, very helpful. Thank you so much for spending time with me today for the interview. So thank you, Dr. Barbera. We're so glad to have you in our Next Gen Mentoring Forum. I'd love to have you come back again to talk about Center of Influence. That has been
on
my top of my list to really share with others how to do that. So thank you very much for that. I also wanted to thank California Lutheran University School of Management Financial Planning Program for sponsoring today's Next Gen Mentoring Forum. Once again, California Lutheran University School of Management offers MBA in financial planning, helping financial planning professionals pursue a leadership position to grow their financial planning practice by deploying advanced financial planning skills, effective communication, counseling, as well as streamlined practice management in leveraging FinTech. Please sign up for our info session for more information. Our next Next Gen Mentoring session is on November 3rd, which is next week at 3 p.m., a little bit out of our normal schedule. Please join me to interview Dr. Eka Kumar on how to counsel clients without shaming them. I'm really looking forward to that because I have done that before, and I really want to find out how not to do that. And so thank you all. Thank you very much for attending, and we'll see you in the Next Gen Mentoring for next week. Thank you.